That's Segundo here, and now that the year is almost out, I'm ready to party! You'd be surprised at the number of escort services who are okay with aerosol cheese. Of course, any real party requires serious preparation, a state of mind where panic is a given and cash flow is contingent upon the number of guests who drink down your tequila supply. With this in mind, our young roving correspondent talked not with a particular party expert, but with a woman named Amy Sedaris. I'm sorry to say that we couldn't get Martha Stewart, who demanded that we perform cunnilingus on her as we asked her questions. Unfortunately, as usual, I was not asked by our producers to assist in questioning Miss Sedaris. In fact, they put me into a locked closet and threw away the key. Of course, our young correspondent was, of course, quite professional. Too bad for him.
Okay, so I am here with Amy Sedaris, who is not only a noted Manhattan baker, but also the author of I Like You, which is a hospitality guide. How are you doing, Amy?
I'm good, thank you.
First off, I wanted to ask you, is hospitality a lost art these days? And do you think that Martha Stewart may have given hospitality a bad name? Or?
I don't know. I mean, I grew up in the South where I was surrounded by it. And then in New York, I don't seem to be around it as much. I have never been inspired by Martha Stewart. I've never seen anything that she's done or anything. I just feel like, I just know that I personally like to have it in my life. I entertain a lot. I cook a lot. I like to have people over. And I just think it's something that more people should do. I think what prevents them from doing it is, you know, they're just intimidated or they're afraid that it's a lot. You have to do a lot more than you actually have to do.
Or perhaps maybe do you think people are lazy or something? Because, I mean, there are a lot
of people. Yeah, or they don't have the space. In New York, a lot of times people don't, you know. So this book is also good for a guest. If you're invited to someone's house a lot, then I'm just letting you know what we as entertainers do to put on a show.
Okay. Well, I wanted to actually ask you, because taxonomy in this book seems to be a very kind of helpful reference point for you and for other people to throw a very effective party. For example, you have not only special themes for the party, such as South of the Border and things like that, but you also have, you know, information on how to throw parties for children, mm-hmm. for the elderly, and even for lumberjacks. And
right.
I wanted to actually ask, how can a party maintain its natural flow when you have these kinds of taxonomic sort of structures? What about a sort of unexpected kind of spontaneous sort of thing that happens? Or are these themes more intended as for the host to kind of have a guide to make sure that she's or he is okay?
Well, for the book, I don't normally have gimmicks, and yeah. I don't normally have themes for my parties. But for the book, I came up with what I thought would be challenging for hostess, like a hot lunch. And I thought, who eats hot lunches? Lumberjacks and grips. So I thought, oh, I'll have a lumberjack for lunch. Or, you know, if you have a bunch of old people over, you know, what you have to, you know, just what the hostess has to think about, or children, or someone grieving, or a depressed person. So I was just trying to come up with things that I found would be challenging. Mm-hmm. But normally in real life, when I entertain, I don't like themes and gimmicks to fall back on.
Then for someone who is actually consulting this book for advice, what is the role of themes then?
Well, I'm just letting you know what the challenges would be, you know, what to look out for if there is someone old. You know, some people might have to have a lot of old people in their life, so I'm just letting you know if that happens is what you should do, you know. But I'm just saying, me personally, I haven't had, you know, anyone over in the early hundreds
oh, really?
To my apartment. Yeah.
Do you think maybe this might help you to become a better host if you were to have like a whole bunch of like, you know, people from a rest home perhaps visit you?
Yeah, wow, good time. Well, maybe at least I would know what to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And then the large print is very helpful.
Right, right. Oh, yeah. It's the only one I can read out loud.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the first hospitality book or even any kind of sort of like sociology book that actually suggests that you can actually profit from the parties.
Oh, always. And it's all about making a dollar
yeah,
with
well,
me.
I'm just wondering, though, does this sort of fly in the face of essentially the host is this munificent person who invites all these people into their home? And here you are collecting sort of dough. Well, this
dough,
this is a bit
25
of contra-
cents. I mean, I just do it because I like the transaction. I think it goes back to my Girl Scout days where you have a product and you want to sell it. So I just do it because people, it's just a bit, you know. And I just, like I said, like the transaction. I like getting rid of all my stuff. People like buying it, you know, and they like leaving with something. And it's usually good stuff. I'm not, you know, some of it's good stuff.
But I guess, though, I mean, this isn't a host supposed to be generous? Doesn't this, is it about
that's
being
just my
generous,
way. Or? That's my way of entertaining. Okay. You know what I mean? And that works for me. No one's ever complained. I mean, I'm just asking for 25 cents so I can collect enough so I can do my laundry.
This is not a get rich quick scheme, right?
Yeah, no, it never is with me. It's not about that. It's just about that transaction and just seeing what people will buy, you know?
Yeah. Well, you also advocate in this book having a first date in your apartment. Now, some might argue this is fraught with certain expectations on behalf of the date. And I wanted to actually ask you about this because it's like, is catering to someone's specific tastes worth the kind of possibility that a gesture might be misinterpreted or...
Right. Well, usually I do know them, you know what I mean? So it's not a complete blind date, but I just tend to like it on my turf because my apartment it says a lot more about me than I'm going to say out loud verbally. So, you know, yeah, I guess someone else brought that up. Like, isn't that scary to have somebody you don't even know? But I'm not talking blind date, but that way you can just control the evening a little bit more and, you know, they leave. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, I just don't like working in, going to restaurants and that awkwardness. So I would just soon meet at my apartment.
Do you have some sort of screening process or something?
Screening process. I don't really even date. So, that's just in the past that the few times that I've done it, I felt more comfortable having them in my home.
It's interesting because this book is all about sort of like, you know, entertaining in one's home. And it's almost as if it's sort of a guide for how to be, you know, if you're an introvert or if you're a shy person.
Right.
Hospitality is this kind of conduit with the outside world at large. Was this the kind of intent of the book or is this, you know, one person's way, a shy person's way of sort of, you know, oh, well, I'm scared. I'm going to almost have a sort of Call Your Brothers kind of situation.
Right, you know? Right. I think it's just for all people, you know, I think it is for, like I said, you know, for everybody and then the shy person. I mean, it doesn't take much to, I don't know if this is answering your question, to have people over. And it doesn't take much to be a really good guest. So, you know, I do have information in there for shy people. Like if you came to my house and you were really shy, then I would give you a chore to do to bring you out of your shell. You know, be like, hey, you know, why don't you take this cheese ball and pass it around? Or, you know what I mean? I would give you some kind of job so it would get you up out of your seat and stop thinking about yourself. Same with someone who had really bad skin or something, you know, I would probably, you know, push them out there. And
but what if the lazy shy person?
A lazy shy person?
Yeah, exactly. You got two possible sort of social disorders.
Well, that's a double whammy. I don't know. I'm surprised they got them out of their house.
Yeah. Very careful sort of.
Yeah, right.
Well, what I wanted to ask you about also is the considerable detail that you go into for unexpected guests. Now, I realize this is something of an epidemic by living in New York.
Yes.
San Francisco to some degree, but it can't be nearly as bad as in New York. I wanted to, you know, you devote a lot of textual space towards what the guests can do, more so than the host. And I wanted to actually ask you, I mean, how much of hospitality is contingent upon the guest versus, say, the host?
I think it's two-sided. Yeah. I really do. I think it's just as important for the guests as it is for the hostess. I mean, I've had some really bad guests, you know what I mean? And it's like, and some people I haven't even had back because of that. It's not even worth it, you know? It's like, it is a two-way street, I think. But I hate an unexpected guest. I mean, that's my nightmare. When I hear somebody on my door, I'm like, how do they slip past the doorman?
Yeah.
I don't like surprises like that.
Yeah. On average, how many unexpected guests do you generally anticipate?
I don't get a whole lot, but I also live in a neighborhood where some people, because I do TV and film, sometimes I don't know who's down there. You know what I mean? Maybe they know where I live and they, you know, they just expect to come knock on my door. So, you know, sometimes it's scary and I just don't know if I'm going to know that person.
Oh, yeah.
At all.
So you've had like a lot of party crashers or something?
Not party crashers. I haven't had party crashers. Just unexpected people. You know, I could be home alone doing nothing and then my buzzer will ring. Oh, there's someone down here to see you. I'm like, I wasn't expecting anybody. Yeah. I'm not going to run down there if I don't know that person. So
dropping in, people's unexpectedly sort of dropping in even for a couple of hours is just
I don't like that. Yeah, no, I don't like that at all.
Well, what do you think could be done to remedy, like some sort of like...
I don't answer the phone. I don't answer the bell when the doorman calls me up. I just won't answer it.
No, but I mean, like, for example, like, hey, I'm coming into town. I've got to meet with some people. Can I crash at your pad for a couple of days? Is there some sort of like... I mean, is there a sort of universal solution?
Well, usually people know in New York you don't do that. Yeah. You know, there is, you know, it's a small space. You kind of know to get a hotel or ask somebody else. I haven't had anybody say that to me in a long time. I mean, my family comes to visit, they stay with me, you know, and that's okay. But I haven't had anyone ask me that. They know. Like maybe I put out that vibe. Unwanted. you know, unless I invite you to my home. But don't, you know, I usually don't get people calling and asking me to crash on my couch.
It seems to me that you almost keep, do you keep a sort of ledger, or do you keep track of all the guests who frequently sort of come to your apartment?
I remember them all. I don't have to, I mean, I do write down all my menus and I write down all that kind of stuff, but I'll remember if you're allergic to something or, you know, what you brought last time. I'm really good about that kind of thing.
Now, in terms of, like, you know, keeping track of everybody, going, what was I going with this exactly? Never mind that. Well, I actually want.
Do you ever entertain?
Do I entertain? Yeah, sometimes.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, sometimes.
And is there,
it's more of like a really very far from, you know, far from lavish as your book.
I don't have lavish events either anymore. I mean, I used to when David lived in New York. I have more, you know, larger affairs. But after he moved, I tend to have smaller events and last minute.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I wanted to actually ask you about the book's design, which is very interesting. It's sort of a cross between a sort of, you know, kind of 1970s-ish kind of cookbook and also sort of elements of a sort of children's book. What was your working relationship with Lenny Narr and Jessica Rosenberg?
When I worked on the book, I did a mock-up book. I put together my own book. But I needed a designer to help me take that mock-up book and turn it, you know, and put it on a computer. So I worked with a couple people and they just weren't working out because the deal was I had to be there. I mean, it was definitely my vision and I wanted to design the book since I art directed it. So these two kids, they were in their 20s, would come to my apartment every night after work and then on weekends, and we would sit around my kitchen table and look at my mock-up book and then put it on the computer. And it was great because they kept saying, you know, you never work like this, you know, we don't normally do this, but that was my deal with Warner, that I'd be able to design the book. So that was our process, and it was fun, and they were great. I liked working with kids. They were very enthusiastic and they had a lot of energy. They had good input, they had really good ideas, and I trusted them. You know, and I'm scared of the computer. So, you know, when I saw things transferred, I was like, oh, no, you know what I mean? It just looked different to me, or I didn't want it to lose its homemade quality, you know.
Really? So you have a sort of an innate kind of hesitation with anything digital and
analog. I do.
Why is that?
I don't know. I just think that I like homemade things, and I like to see the stitches on things, you know. I like to see the flaws, and I think when it goes to the computer, it tends to lose that.
Did you do any sort of thing? Did you ensure that these designers, these two kids, were actually able to kind of keep a sort of really kind of dirty look to some degree?
Yeah, they did. They got it right away. I mean, I didn't have to, you know, they really got it. And like I said, they were real open to me just pointing and saying, no, move that there. I want this there. Or, you know what I mean? They were good. And then we were on a roll.
Did you do any of the illustrations in the book?
No, I told everybody what to draw.
Okay.
Yeah, I was very specific about what I wanted and... Yeah.
There's lots of teeth throughout this book. I was wondering why that was.
Anything. I like anything with a buck tooth. I like mushrooms with eyes, you know. I like things to look like they come alive at night.
Yeah, okay.
I do. It is a lot of, like, a children's book. But I wanted it to look so visual, like kids or illiterate people could enjoy it, you know, like so they could turn the page and see a picture and write their own book if they weren't going to read the text.
Gotcha. Well, I wanted to note that you also object to brunch in this.
Now, I'm not a brunch person.
Well, I wanted to actually pose the sort of scenario, like, brunch is actually helpful in, I suppose, certain social situations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say you wake up at 11 in the morning and you have someone mysterious that you don't know living next to you. The only real way to actually figure out what the hell has happened is to go out and have brunch and gorge yourself on food and drink. So it does have some applicable purposes.
Yeah, I'm sure. I personally just don't like it. I don't like that much food in the middle of the day. I just don't like the foods. I don't like that kind of conversation during the day. I've just never been into brunch. I've worked brunch in restaurants, and I even couldn't stand that.
Well, I mean, do you object to, like, sort of, is it more the restaurant, or is it more the fact that you have to have sort of three meals a day?
It's just, what do you do after all that food? What do you do after all that food, and it's 3 p.m?
You
then
go
what
for
happens?
A long walk.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, and it's funny, I love to watch young couples shop for brunch during the day. I love to see them, you know, on Saturday night in the grocery stores discussing what to buy. I like seeing them Sunday morning in the grocery stores. I'm just like, oh, God, I just would just hate that so much.
Well, this brings up an interesting scenario, because if you have, if you're obviously observing people to kind of get hints for this particular book, someone else could very well do the same. What is the argument for, you know, buying the book versus just going around attending a lot of parties and just observing what the host does?
Well, I love watching real hostesses perform. I mean, I'm not judging them in a negative, you know, but I just love watching people who are really good at this. I'm just doing this my way. I'm not like good at it. You know what I mean? I'm just, and that's what I'm saying. You know, you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to have a bunch of fancy silverware and tea sets and stuff. You know, I just enjoy having people over, and I know that they have a good time at my house. So when I'm at someone's house who has all that equipment and they're really good at it, I just can't get enough of it. I love it. I love to watch people really, you know, who are really good at it do their thing. I just learn from it.
How much of the sort of tips in this book are from observation, from your experience waitressing, and also from, you know, your own sorts of parties that you particularly?
It's all from that, you know, watching people. It's from local hospitality shows, from old books. It's from, you know, that's where the subtitle Under the Influence comes from. You know, it's just under the influence of all those people, all those things.
Gotcha. Now, I wanted to actually also ask, are there any sort of bad party tips that you had, or bad hosting sort of duties that you had observed in the process?
From other people?
Yeah.
People who don't, who think it's cute that they've never entertained before, and they invite people over, and they're just not prepared at all. You know, their sink's full of dirty dishes, their house is still a mess, they got animals everywhere. The food isn't orchestrated, you know, right, and they don't have anything to drink for people. They run out of ice. I mean, they just didn't think at all, and it's irritating. It's like wasting my time.
Is there any way to sort of reform a bad host, or?
I wouldn't if that was you and I went to your house, unless you asked or whatever, but, you know, I don't know if I would just feel free to come up to you and say, you know what you need to do. I probably wouldn't do that. I mean, this is your thing, and you did it your way. I would just be like, don't waste my time.
So it's sort of a Darwinian process, natural selection. Some people are meant to host, and
some people aren't.
What about the people who just are inept hosts? I mean, is there any hope for them by reading this book? Or?
I hope so. I think so. Anyone who does entertain, they're not going to learn anything from this book. I mean, they're probably going to say, that's true, or Amy, you could have elaborated on this, or, you know what I mean? So they already know it. So it is more for people who don't entertain, I think, so they can appreciate what we actually go through.
Sure. Well, I mean, how would you just sort of juxtapose your own sort of life? It seems to me that you are possibly are quite, you know, introverted, in the sense that the apartment here in this book is sort of serves as a kind of, you know, central base, versus, like, you know, your life waitressing in the past, or also doing baking and things like that. What's the sort of relationship between these kinds of two sort of lives, I suppose, or two aspects of your life, right?
Well, I'm a very domestic person. I spend all my time at home. I mean, I like going out, and I like working with the public. I learn so much about it, but at the end of the day, I like to be at home, either cooking for myself or cooking for somebody else. But I'm a real, you know, homebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Does that answer your question?
That sort of does.
Oh, okay.
But I kind of wanted to sort of get a sense of, like, you know, how you sort of negotiate the world. I was sort of suggesting earlier that this book is kind of like the introvert's guide towards associating with other people, that hospitality or hosting people into your home is a great way for you to sort of, okay, I don't really like to leave the house, or, you know, someone who is a homebody then has this conduit to, you know, really kind of allow themselves to interact with other people instead of just remaining alone.
Well, I'm a good people person. It's just, I guess, because I do spend so much time talking to people and socializing and working with the public, that when, you know, there's a time when the clock changes, and I also appreciate that time alone. I mean, I love to be by myself more than anything in the world, but I'm also really good at being with other people. You know, I'm lucky that way. Yeah. You know, that I'm able to do both.
Do you find it yourself more comfortable as a host than as a guest at a party, or?
Yeah, I like being in charge. I like being in control. I like having a job. Like, the same thing when, like, I'm selling books or there's a table between us. You know, I like a counter. You know, I love the public, but if that counter is not there, it's a different story. You know, so I really like that. Be like I'd rather work the party than be a guest at a party. You know, because then I've got a job. You know, I love that. Like the prom, I didn't go to my prom. I worked my prom, so I was still able to be at the prom, but I had a job to do. Like, this is very nice talking to you, but I have to go serve punch. So, I mean, I do have that to stay busy, and, you know, I got to sell stuff. You know, but when I am a guest at someone else's house, I just try to, you know, they invited me for a reason. You know, whatever that reason is. So I want to make sure I come with energy and mingle and, you know, contribute to keeping the ball up. You know, that's my job.
It's kind of like you sort of being a performer, essentially.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's that's my job when I'm invited to a party. I'm not going to go and sit in a corner and just talk to that one person I came with or not eat the food or, you know.
So there's really kind of like sort of, I guess, I mean, I hate to compare you to a robot, but there's essentially two modes here.
I'm a robot.
That is, I'm not actually talking to Amy Sedaris at all. I'm actually talking to her, you know, this android is fantastic. I'm going to have to praise the Cybernetics Corporation. But anyway, no, I mean, I wanted to actually ask if there's sort of like two modes for you, kind of sort of idle contemplator or being alone versus like sort of like, you know, being constantly in motion.
Well, there's an audience, you know what I mean? It's no different than if we're having a one-on-one conversation, yeah. I'm going to be different. If there's an audience, that energy is going to give me something and I'm going to perform more. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, it's the same thing when you sit down, you know, everyone sits down. You stand up, everyone stands up. So, you know, that alone makes the energy completely different. It's the same thing when I watch people on Larry King. I'm like, how do they do it? It's just a studio. It's a one-on-one. I feel like if I don't hear someone laughing or crying, I don't think they're listening at all. So if there's a crowd, then I've got to be there for that crowd. If it's a one-on-one, I'm like, oh, great. You know what I mean? So yeah. It's just very different.
I'm wondering if you're familiar. There was a very interesting essay in The Atlantic probably about, I don't know, 4 years ago, I want to say. It's you may be aware of this. It was by Jonathan Rauch. It was this interesting article called Caring for Your Inner Introvert, in which he sort of styled certain people as, you know, very kind of uncomfortable in sort of social settings and really only able to kind of communicate with like two people at a time, mm-hmm, and just really wanting to withdraw, and that how they, because this is a sort of extrovert society, that they were sort of mislabeled. I mean, would you say that you maybe might be categorized in something along
I don't know. I know people like what you're talking about who are really uncomfortable in a social situation. You know, they're entertainers too,
sure,
without mentioning their names, but I'm like, but you get them alone and I can just feel them sweating. And I guess when I see this person, I just try to lock myself into them, make them feel comfortable, because I just know they're cringing. Even my brother David sometimes, I think, can feel that way. But, you know, I'm really good at spotting those people, and then I can kind of, you know, hook myself up with them and give them, you know, let them relax and just know that I'm going to hang out with them and talk to them and everything.
Is there no gray area between the sort of these kinds of alone versus like, you know, performing? Sort of
I don't know. Maybe that's where alcohol and drugs come in. You know, here, take this. You're going to feel a lot better. You know, I don't know. I think a lot of people say that too, with like a lot of stand-ups or a lot of comedians are really boring and really shy when you get them off stage.
Absolutely. Well, there's also the whole act of creation, too. It's how it comes with any writer.
Right.
It's that, you know, if you actually go examine, they're essentially sitting on their ass, and they're basically, you know, spending all this time ruminating. And it's from afar, you know, it's the actual work itself that is the interesting part, not necessarily the actual act of composing it and planning it.
Right. Well, I noticed when I worked on this book, because I don't consider myself a writer at all. So when I worked on this book, I noticed I had a harder time talking to people because I was so like this. You know, I was constantly thinking of the book and how to write it down on a piece of paper rather than standing up and talking about it. So I noticed I had a very difficult time talking to other people. It was like impossible. I was like, huh? I mean, my mind just switched gears. And that's never happened to me before, because I've never sat down, you know, in anything before like that.
Even when, you know, creating a show or creating any sort of...
No, because I'm working with other people and I'm bouncing ideas off. And usually they're writing it and I'm on my feet writing it. So it's like, you know, it's a different process.
Huh. So this book was like the first time that you had really sort of polarized your concentration into one.
Yes. And then because I'm not a writer, then I had Paul Dinello and this girl Antonia sit down with me and read, you know, they would read what I wrote and everything. And then we would rewrite it and they would help me hone it and stuff. So I definitely needed that.
Gotcha. Well, actually, speaking of the whole drugs and alcohol, I live in the Haight-Ashbury, and I was mystified by the whole grape jelly with chocolate sauce
munchies. I was just trying to come up with anything. You know,
really,
what I mean?
I was wondering if there was actually some sort of like, you know, existential precedent for that.
No, some people gave me suggestions and other things. I just sat in my apartment thinking, okay, what else would I be desperate? What else would I do? I'd stick a hot dog in Swiss Miss. Okay, maybe I would do that. You know, but that's also about how annoying it is when people drink too much at a party and they think they're the life of it when they're really killing it. They're really annoying to entertain for.
It also taints the sort of culinary joy of a party sometimes.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah,
it does.
There are also a number of helpful tips in this book for, mm-hmm, you know, which we were kind of mentioning, you know, the idea of cooking lasagna for one. The cheese ball thing, which, you know, I'm not a cereal party hoster, but that was a very helpful suggestion.
Rerolling it?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah, it works.
I know.
It works.
But simultaneously, there's it's interspersed with all these more cunning sort of suggestions, such as the salad rabbit droppings thing.
Oh, you know? I was just teasing.
How can the reader be expected to sort of separate these sort of helpful
I think
things?
They know. I mean, I threw a couple of those in there, again, just to make the book entertaining. You know, I didn't want it. If you're writing a book on entertaining, it's got to be somewhat entertaining. Anyone who knows me,
Do you absolve yourself from responsibility? It's out there. The reader must sort of determine the difference.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why you figure it out.
Do you often find yourself sort of misinterpreted? Because, I mean...
All the time.
You know.
Very misunderstood and very... Yeah, all the time.
I bring this up because, I mean, I won't mention a certain television show, which, frankly, I actually haven't watched many episodes of anyway. But I mean, you know, people sort of associate... you with that particular character. And here is this book, which I viewed as a very sort of sincere book, and a very sort of, you know, earnest book. Do you find this to be a sort of struggle for you to kind of, you know, this very sort of heartfelt sort of tips, series of suggestions, which we just named a few of them, is, you know, misinterpreted, oh, that's just Amy being her, you know, funny
yeah,
again.
Yeah, I have that problem all the time. You know, they want me to be that junkie whore, you know, Jerry Blank. And, you know, people who know me, this isn't unusual. I mean, people who know me, you know, and then the people that see me on TV and films, but you know, that's okay. That's always going to happen. It's the same. I fought so hard for this not to be in the humor section, you know, because then people wouldn't take it seriously. And I just wanted to, I mean, that's why I say I don't really do anything. I don't call myself an actress or, you know, comedian or whatever. You know, I just don't like to put myself in a box because I like to do so many things, you know.
This must have been a major struggle then with the publisher when you...
It was, but they listened to me. I mean, bookstores are going to put it in humor anyway, a lot of them, but at least it won't be stamped humor. You know, so even in the beginning under on the Congress page, they wanted something next to my name to say what I do. And I was like, but why? You know, no one else does that. So I put businesswoman. I'm a businesswoman.
Absolutely. Well,
I'm like, what's the point of that? You know, I have to. Why do I have to say what I do? You know, just why does it matter?
But when people sort of like stamp you with this persona, I mean, you know, it seems...
Then you have to be that. That's my problem. Yeah. Then I feel like, oh, I have to be that person now. And then I always think I'm going to fail at doing that, or you know, they'll just have expectations and I'll let them down. So I would rather not say what I do, you know, and then just to be able to do whatever I want.
But what about someone who's going to, you know, approach this book with the sort of, you know, prism of everything that you have done before? Is there any way that do you think this book will shake off the yoke of this?
Probably not. I mean, people do, or you know, I mean, probably not. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I hear you. I mean, I talked with Tommy Chong about this very issue about, well, he believed basically the split between him and Cheech was that Cheech didn't want to fall into this persona, and Chong was like, well, you know, this is who you are. And
exactly.
You
know, I know.
It's one of those situations. I mean, you know, is there any real way for, particularly when you're talking about, you know, a very sort of very explicit sort of persona that people sort of associate with you, is there any real way to shake this off, or is this kind of is this book kind of the first step in terms of, you know?
I don't know. I guess I just have to go with it. I mean, like, I would like to do a TV show based on my book.
Yeah.
And then that would be character driven. So, I mean, I like doing character work. It'll just be a different character. You know, there are parts of Jerry Blank that's going to be in me. It's in the book, you know, that came from me. So aspects of that will be in there. You just don't want to get stuck. I just don't want to get pigeonholed. And the only way to do that is to keep on, the next thing I do will be completely different. You know, just make, it's just like Dustin Hoffman. What was his first film? The Graduate, was it?
Well,
and, no. Midnight Cowboy, and then he did The Graduate. I mean, that was that was a big risk that he did. So, I mean, he could have easily been cast doing roles like he did in Midnight Cowboy. But he immediately went to The Graduate, and I thought that was a really cool thing to do.
What about just like doing something completely stark and dramatic, or producing this book? Why not just produce it? Just like, this is helpful hints and devoid of any kind of humor.
I find humor in everything, and I don't want, you know, another thing that people, it's this whole Martha Stewart thing, and I was never inspired by her or the ladies, Rachel Ray and people like that. So people now want me to, you know, Martha Stewart on crack, you know, or like I got the idea from one of her books, and you know, I can't, you know, that's good. People are going to say that regardless, you know, they're always going to say that, but that's not true either. I don't want to be one of those ladies.
Yeah,
you know, I don't want to.
No, I hear you. That's why I like this
that's
book.
That's why it's hard. Yeah,
it was sort of like this, kind of like, look, everyday regular people can host too.
Right.
You don't have to have like a six-figure income.
Exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, you have to be a warm person.
Yeah.
And you can't tell me you're warm. I'm going to tell you if you're warm or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you can tell who's going to be good at it or not. You know, it's a really generous thing to have people into your home.
Sure.
You know, and you have to like them.
Yeah.
To have them. I mean, I've had parties before where I didn't know anybody, you know, where I've had a friend, you know, I was dating a guy, I said, you invite everybody and I'll make dinner. And I met a whole room of people I've never met before in my entire life. So it was my present to him, you know, so.
I'm wondering if this level, this populism I was sort of suggesting in the last question was kind of one of the reasons why you had a lot of recipes or even a lot of basic instructions, such as how to put on your stockings versus more elaborate sort of concoctions like, you know, many of the, like yogurt spaghetti, which is like, you know, inspired by the Kochelis's book, The Glorious Foods of Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Was this kind of a concern? Did you want to sort of like make this a book for everybody? Or
I did. Well, just food, what I liked.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be a book of everything that I like. You know what I mean? And just you know, put it out there for other people and hope that they like it too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many different, you know, recipes that came from, you know, somewhere from my mom, old cookbooks, friends, you know, it's all over the place.
I'm wondering why the index in this book was limited to recipes, because there's a lot of, like, helpful tips, there's crafts and things like that, and you actually, what was interesting is that you have frequent page references throughout the book, go to page so-and-so, and it's like, I was flipping through the book, you know, trying to, you know, think of things to ask you, and it was just like, there's a general table of contents, and then there's an index with the recipes. I'm wondering why you chose to concentrate exclusively on the recipes, or is this a book that you intended?
That was a Warner thing. It gave me complete freedom. I even got to pick the stitching out, but when it came to the index, that was their territory, and they made that clear, because I was like, you know, some of the names, you know, or the food, I was like, oh, don't call, and they go, I mean, I got the impression that I was not really, that's the one territory they were like, look, we know how to do the index, so I let them do it. But I was wondering the same thing, like, you know, and I had to lose 25 pages, so I just cut the instructions to the crafts, and I figured people can just, you know, I'm not gonna teach you how to cook with this book. You gotta already know how to make a cream sauce. So I figured even with the crafts, you can just eyeball it and make your own crafts.
You can look in the back of a pumpkin.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's what I do. So, you know, and it's hard, you know, what am I gonna try to rewrite the back of a pumpkin can? You know, it's so obvious that it's a recipe, so it takes a lot of energy to steal a recipe and rewrite it. You know what I mean? I'm just like, forget it.
Well, so. I guess what I'm wondering is that, I mean, did you have the page references within the actual text when you knew, oh, I don't have an index, they're not going to allow me to... I mean, I'm just wondering if this was intended from the get-go as a book to get lost in.
For the reader to get lost in?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, because that's how I think. I mean, it's all random, and that's why I need help with writing, because you can imagine the writing was all over the place. So they helped me organize my chaos. So visually, I was able to go off and do. But I don't think Warner really understood it until they really saw the mock-up. Like, oh, okay, because it was hard to write down, oh, there's going to be a column here and a suggestion here and a stain removal tip here. And I don't think visually where I could see it, they couldn't see it yet till the very end.
Was art direction a very helpful kind for you to sort of come up with more content? Or?
Yeah, I mean, once I saw on the page, I was like, oh, there's space here. I want something here, you know, or there, you know. So once I saw the pages laid out, that helped me, you know, see everything. Because I'm much more visual than anything else.
So if anything, it seems to me that this book was a way for you to kind of, like, all these things that you were naturally doing already in your life was a way for you to kind of organize them.
And put them in a book form,
and finally you were able to figure out how everything kind of ties together.
And I like being in charge and telling people what to do. And usually I'm working with other people and I let them worry about certain things. But with this, it was all on my shoulders. So, and I liked being Mr. Slate, you know, in charge of the rock quarry. And I had everybody clock in. And I took it like, on that Girl Scout level, you know what I mean? And that's how I like things. I want the money to go into a jar, and I can see the jar. I don't want it to be complicated. So it was just like working on this book was like that, like a third grader.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Were you like this sort of as a child and kind of like getting everything organized?
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of something that you've been able to kind of carry over?
Well, that's how I run my whole life. You know, even with an agent, it's like even I have an agent for acting and stuff, but I like to get the job and then I call my agent. I don't want her out there talking about me and trying to get work for me. I like calling her saying I'm going to do this because I think that I don't like rejection. I, you know, I failed first grade, you know, and I think that's where it came came from. So I like to do my own projects, get my own team together, springboard new talent, and then put it out there.
So, but you have to sort of let go and allow, and you know, delegate sometimes.
Yeah, no, I did, and I did with people, you know, like, this is what I want. I want a snake, I want pom-pom eyes, I want glue, you know, I was very specific, and then they could sit there and make it, and, you know, I did people jobs, like, yeah, definitely.
Well, what steps do you do to sort of safeguard a situation where people are kind of like suggesting, oh, this, and this, and...
I'm open to it, and then sometimes I'll see it, I'm like, oh, no, absolutely not, that's too neat for me, or that's the way you would do it, no, I don't want, you know, and a lot of the stuff in the book, it's melting because we shot it in the summer,
yeah.
And I like that element of it. You know, it was so hot and everything was melting. I was like, that's perfect.
So it's a matter of basically being flexible and decisive then.
Yeah, flexible and decisive. Yeah, you can do it. I mean, I knew, yeah, I'm always open, you know, but it's important for me for ideas to be mine a lot of times.
Gotcha. One last question, because I know we got to wrap this up, but I wanted to actually ask you what you do to sort of, what's your input mode like? What kind of life do you sort of, you know, I mean, we were mentioning sort of attending other parties and observing other hosts, but in terms of everything you do, is there a specific sort of, you know, do you throw yourself in quietly into the world to kind of figure out, oh, well, you know, this will, I'll be able to sort of, you know, I'll be able to take this in and actually have it come out in some form, whether this book or whether a show or whatnot. I mean, are there specific steps you take, or at this point?
I do nothing but sit around and think of ideas and how I'm going to get them off. You know, I don't know if this is answering your question, but I'm constantly thinking about ideas and what I want to do next. My problem is, and I've heard it my whole life, stop thinking of ideas, Amy. You have to stop it and stick to this. And it's like when I worked with plays with David, you know, we would come up with an idea and we would exhaust every possibility and then tear it up and then start all over again. You know what I mean? And I just constantly want to do, you know, I'm bored with it. I want to move on and do something else. So to stick with a project for a year and a half was really hard for me. You know, sit here. I was already wanting to move on and, you know, and changing things. So even when I worked with, I hired an illustrator and someone to do the hand lettering, and I paid them a lot of money, and they did a lot of work, and I didn't use any of it. And I turned around and just changed my mind and went with somebody completely different. And it ended up costing me a lot of money, but I also knew that's such a pattern with me.
You're also sort of burdened because you can't work on multiple projects at the same time, and you have to concentrate on one. What do you do to sort of, like, you know, squelch the sort of impulse that goes, oh, no, I want it now? You
know? I know. I do it. Well, that's why my apartment's so full of everything. If I'm home alone and I want to make an airing tree out of a screen door, I will have everything to make it at my fingertips. You know, if you come over to my house and I want you to do something, you say, oh, Amy, I can't do it because I need a saw. I've got two saws for you. Or I've got, you know, a sewing machine for you. You're not going to leave my apartment and not do what I asked you to come over and do. I mean, I have it all. You know, I'm just, my mind is just, it just works that way.
Do you need constant stimuli, basically?
Do I what?
Do you need constant stimuli?
I do. I'm inspired. And that's why I don't watch the Food Network or I don't watch comedies, because I don't want to be inspired by something that I do. I'd rather be inspired by the drama on TV and say, what's funny about that? Or be inspired by, you know, watching The Deer Hunter and get my cooking show idea from that somehow, rather than go to the main source.
Well, it's any consolation, it's why I don't have basic cable. I don't have cable. Because if I had Turner Classic Movies, I would never leave the house. It's safeguard so you can actually live, you know. It's,
yeah, you don't want to be... Yeah, so I'm pretty, you know, picky about that kind of thing. But, you know, I did look at some old hospitality books, and they're all the same. We all had the same information, and that I liked. Anyone who entertains is going to... They already know this information.
Do you ever try to sort of, like, place yourself in a kind of environment devoid of any sorts of things around? I mean, like, for example, I guess this is semi-sparse.
Yeah.
I mean, is
oh,
this
yeah.
a good way for you to kind of reset your mind?
Yeah, I don't like something. Even in my apartment, I don't play any music.
Huh.
I don't do, you know, sometimes, you know, someone will say, hey, let's go, you know, to Coney Island. And I'm like, oh, no, I'd rather think about... You know, I'd rather think about Coney Island than go to Coney Island. Like, try to come up with what it would be like, because once I'm there, then I'm inspired, and I'm always happy that I, you know, I'm always happy that I went to the event or whatever, but I would be content staying at home thinking about the party instead of going to the party.
So you need to be lost. Imagination, I mean, obviously
yeah,
we're...
Yeah, get lost in my head with it, you know, so I can think about it. And then, but then when you go, you're disappointed because it's not what you had in your mind.
But on the flip side, this also, you know, causes, again, this misunderstanding that something that is sort of conceptual inside your mind may not necessarily be, you know, parsed by the everyday people. I mean,
right.
You know, what steps do you do to kind of make something that is really outlandish or bizarre that you come up with, whether in this book or whether anything else, so that people can sort of understand it, or at least
well, that's when I work with other people and they help me. You know, that's why I have to go, and they'll be like, well, okay, Amy, I mean, I'm really bad at articulating myself, and so I go to people like Paul Donnell or Stephen Colbert. It's almost like a deaf mute, and I'm trying, and they're like, okay, we know what she's saying, and they can speak for me. And because a lot of times when I do interviews, I'm like, you have to talk to me like I'm six. You know, you have to, I'm a simple person, you know what I mean? And so a lot of times people, you know, especially Paul and Stephen, protect me that way. You know, like, you know, that they can speak for me and say, okay, this is what Amy means. Or, you know, if I don't complain too much, they can say, oh, she's pretty serious about this, so I think her instincts are probably right. Like, you know, because I do go by my gut and my instinct a lot, you know, like an animal or a child, you know. So, you know, people who know me really well can understand that and protect me that way.
What did you know of this? I mean, when you moved to Chicago, was this something that you kind of figured out while you were there?
I've known it my whole life. You know what I mean? Yeah. I've always known it.
Well, when did you know? When did you have like a really good staple of people? When did you feel that you had like people?
Well, David.
Yeah.
You know, my brother David, working with him, and Paul and Steven at Second City. And that's what's scary about being out here on my own. You know what I mean? Sometimes I'm like, oh no, who's gonna help me, you know, do this? But, you know, I'm doing all right, you know?
With that in mind, you've done all right. Well, it was a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much,
Thank you
Amy.
So much. You're so articulate. Your vocabulary is amazing. Wow.